Hello everybody and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks. My name's John, I'm your host, and today I'm recording from not Reykjavik, Iceland as always, but from the leafy Staffordshire countryside. I'm back here visiting family before a trip down to London for the WASD Games Festival, and I have put into my case a little mini podcast kit including an old condenser mic that I used to use for the first 150 or so episodes of this podcast, in fact. So if it sounds different to usual, that's why. I'm recording on a scaled-down setup. But I thought while I'm on this trip, I'm still playing games, and it might be fun to make an episode for you on the road. So I have a little studio with me, and I'm going to try my best to make it sound good for you. And I might well make an episode about WASD, actually. I'm going down to London on Monday the 22nd of April, for a game dev event that is going on in Stoke Newington. I'll be there. There's some devs going to show their games on laptops just in a bar called the Loading Bar. I will then have a couple of days in London and then go to the WASD Festival proper, where there are tens of games showing. And this is going to be great, man. I get so much FOMO watching all the coverage of PAX, PAX East, GDC, Day of the Devs, all of that stuff that happens over in the States. We don't have much like that in Iceland, and I've never been to that kind of event before, actually. So it's going to be a first for me. I'm very excited about it. I've got some appointments to look at some games. And so whilst I'm down there in London, I will record episodes, or at least one big roundup episode. Maybe even get some field recording from the event. We'll see how that sounds, and I'll put together a piece of coverage of that event for you. Let you know what the good games were, let you know who I met down there, and just give a flavour of the WASD Games event. Being on the road does mean that the upload schedule might be a little bit off, like today I'm going to upload on a Sunday instead of a Friday or a Saturday, so you might see podcasts popping up at strange times, or at least unusual times, before I get back to my studio proper and pick up business as usual. But hopefully there will be something for you throughout the next couple of weeks. But before all that begins, I do have an episode for you today. I'm going to do a little news roundup. We had a Nintendo Indie World Direct last week that gave us release dates for some things that I've really been looking forward to, unveiled a couple of new games, and gave a few updates on things that we're expecting. And outside of that, we also got a release date for one of my most anticipated games of the year, 1000 Times Resist. So I'm going to backtrack. I've talked about that game before. I reviewed the demo last year, but I think it's worth flagging it up ahead of its May release, letting people know about it. I'm not sure that it's made such a huge splash out there in the world, so I want to do my little bit and at least talk about it here on the show before it comes out. And I've also played one more Playdate game. I brought the little Playdate console with me in my case, so I have that with me for the trip. I think it's a good tiny, tiny little console, so hopefully I can get through some Playdate games. I have played one. It was Mars After Midnight from Lucas Pope, the designer of Papers, Please and The Return of the Obra Dinn. I have played a couple of hours of Mars After Midnight, enough to review it, and so I'm going to talk about that game as well on the episode. But first things first, let's talk about that Nintendo Indie World Direct that happened last week. It was a funny one, actually. I think they were trying out something new with the commentators. I thought it was quite tonally weird. It had this extremely cutesy vocal delivery that made me feel like they were announcing the games like to a cute baby or something. It was like wholesome games turned up to 100. Very much like, and now, are you all ready for Sticky Business? Aren't you all pleased? It was very much like that. It felt a little bit condescending. But format aside, we did see some new games. We got a few release dates for promising titles that I've been looking forward to. So here are the things that caught my eye from the Indie World Direct, starting with four things that were new, at least to me. The first one was a Shadow Drop, also known as, I think, a Snap release in the UK. It was Sticky Business. This is a business management game based around making stickers. You run a business that makes stickers for clients. You get emails from them. They've all got stories about what the stickers are for. You lay them out visually. You print them off. You post them out. You take new orders. So it's a game about making stickers. A little bit of a story, a little bit of a management sim. It looks very cute, and it's not actually a new game. It has been out on Steam, where it has overwhelmingly positive user reviews from 3,000 reviewers, so it's a big sample size. But it seems like a really mellow time. So Sticky Business came out on the day of the Direct and is out now. I'd be curious to hear from anyone that's playing it. It looks cute. If you have been playing it, give me a tweet. I'm at Gaming in the Wild. I'd like to hear about this game. I think one of the things that caught the most people's attention as well was a new game announcement from Atari, and that was for Yars Rising. It's quite a pretty-looking, extremely retro-looking platform game an action platformer. We saw a pixel character running, shooting, jumping, crouching under Metroidvania-esque doorways, that kind of thing. You imagine there will be some puzzle stuff in there. This one did not really speak to me graphically. It did look like a throwback to the Super Nintendo Mega Drive kind of era, maybe a little bit of Mega Man, maybe a little bit of Metroid vibes. But people did seem very excited about it. It is from Atari, and it is coming out summer this year. That was Yars Rising. Another little interesting one was Refined Self. This was a 2D pixel art exploration game, where it looks like you walk around a historical Japanese environment, an old-style Japanese environment. It's 2D, side-on, pixel art, old Japanese-style adventure game where, yeah, you're talking to people. And at the end, the twist on this one is that you get a personality type. So much like those personality tests that you do on the internet, where you answer a few questions and then it tells you if you are, you know, a leader or a spiritualist or whatever. It has a little bit of that built into it as well. So that one seems interesting. I really like the visual style of it. That one is called Refined Self, and it's coming out in summer this year. The fourth game that was new to me was Anton Blast. This is an anarchic Pizza Tower-style fast-paced platformer. It has a scribbly Ren and Stimpy energy. It has a bit of a Wario energy. It's coming out on November the 12th, and a demo dropped on Switch as well. So if that sounds interesting to you, then Anton Blast is available as a demo on your Switch. We did also get some updates and quick glimpses of other things. Little Kitty Big City, a game that has been knocking around the showcases for quite a while, is coming out on May the 9th to Switch as well as everything else. But I think that one's coming to Game Pass, so I would probably play it there rather than on the Switch. In fact, most of these games, if I can play them somewhere other than the Switch, I probably will. I think over time, Switch has gone from being my main console to being my last choice, especially since I have the ROG Ally, which now acts as a more powerful handheld. The next game that was interesting to me, Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, developed by Simago, will come out on Switch and PC, so I think that's an Ally game for me, but it is available on Switch. Simago, of course, the directors of Year Walk, or the developers rather, as well as Device 6 and the amazing Sayonara Wild Hearts. But Lorelei and the Laser Eyes is a bit of a departure for them, or rather Sayonara Wild Hearts, the game that they are most well known for, is actually the departure. It's a very bright, breezy, happy game. It is a game about heartbreak, it's a game about pop music, it's just got a lot of sparky, lively energy, and all of their other games are actually pretty gothic, and they have quite obscure, obtuse puzzle elements in them. If you are interested in Simago, I do recommend going back and trying out Year Walk and Device 6. They are mobile games, formative mobile puzzle games. And I think that those games will give you more of an idea of what Lorelei and the Laser Eyes is going to be like. But this one got a release date. It's coming out on May 16th. Really good. It's been in development for years now, so very excited to see it. It's published by Annapurna. And there have been a bunch of previews doing the rounds, so some people have gone hands-on with Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. Digital Trends recently got to play the game, and they said that it's a puzzle-filled haunted hotel, and that it's a bit like Resident Evil. It's a hotel full of locked doors with padlocks requiring number codes, keys, letters that you have to read and take clues from, that you get to wander around, that you get to, the camera has fixed angles like that original Resident Evil. They also said it's an astonishingly complex game with a mounting challenge. They say, the more I learn about the world's puzzle language, the more I'm able to solve things that seemed entirely impossible initially. Early on, I find a room of wooden puzzle boxes that seemingly can't be opened unless I press four buttons in the right order. I have no clue what that means at first. I crack it hours later in a moment of pure galaxy brain when I naturally piece together the most obtuse logic puzzle possible without any hints. So I think that gives you a sense of what kind of game this is going to be. It's going to be a game with seemingly impossible puzzles that you have to pore over and kind of surrender to. It sounds like a game that is not going to hold your hand. Digital Trends also said of this game, Simago fully admits that it doesn't expect a lot of players to finish the game. That's worrying stuff to me, man. If they have made this high-level challenge that they literally don't expect most players to finish, that's troubling to me. I like to feel like I have a shot without dedicating my entire life to a notebook full of notes to try and solve a game, if you know what I mean. But Digital Trends was broadly positive about the game. They said it's cut from the same cloth as genre greats like The Witness and Return of the Obra Dinn. So if that sounds good to you, this is one to watch. That's Lorelei and the Laser Eyes coming to Switch and Steam on May 16th. I'm just going to rock it through the last few. We got a first look at a platformer called Bzzzt. I was really taken with the graphics of this one. It's got beautiful pixel art. It looks a little bit like Haiku the Robot, if you've played that one. You play as a little robot and you're buzzing around through lasers using your dash, using your double jump. It had a Metroidvania platformer vibes. But it was in the sizzle reel at the end, so it really wasn't highlighted at all. We only saw a few seconds, but I much preferred the look of Bzzzt to Yars Rising, which got a much longer trailer. We also saw a little bit more of Animal Well, which is still coming out on May the 9th, although that one will also be on PlayStation Plus, where I will play it, rather than on the Switch. And we got a release date for Shim. This is an exciting one. This is the line-drawn game where you play as a little shadow, and you have to jump between the shadows of things, such as pedestrians, moving cars, signposts, anything that you can find in a street. But you can only jump between shadows, and a lot of the shadows are moving. So it looks like an isometric puzzle platformer based on leaping between shadows in a really cool way. If you have not seen a trailer for Shim, take a look at the Instagram. It's S-C-H-I-M, Shim. It's a really cool looking game, has a really nice visual style, and that is releasing on July 18th. So just a couple of months until we get our hands on that one. So those were the highlights of the Nintendo Indie World Direct, but I also wanted to give a shout out to 1000 Times Resist. This is developed by Sunset Visitor, published by Fellow Traveller, the publishers of The Pale Beyond, Citizen Sleeper, and lots of other narrative-forward games. It's coming out on the 9th of May for Switch and PC. It wasn't featured in the Direct. I think this came from the publisher, Fellow Traveller. And I played a demo of this one at Next Fest last year, and I loved it so much that I actually reviewed it in full, which is very rare for me for a demo. I will normally mention a demo in a few lines in the show if I like it, but this was such an interesting game. I just talked about it at length. It was episode 188, if you'd like to hear the full breakdown. But to give a quick summary here, ahead of that release, this is a really interesting third-person sci-fi adventure game told between multiple time periods that you can flip between. You play as an entity that seems to be a humanoid android in service of an AI called the All-Mother. You don't know what year it is. There is a dark future where you begin, a far future scenario where humanity has been decimated and destroyed by a strange outbreak. It's a disease where people start crying, they never stop, and then they die, and it wipes out most of humanity. The game starts in a high school. It's dark, it's boarded up, the electricity is off. There are a few human guards standing around wearing strange glowing masks. And if you talk to them, they will give you sad poetry and be very existential. But the gameplay allows you to walk around this school, but some gates are boarded shut, presumably to keep out the outbreak. It looks like the scene of a disaster. But the gameplay allows you to switch between the time periods, so you can also step back in time to the school before the outbreak or at the very onset of the outbreak. People are starting to talk about it. And when you step back in time, you see a brightly lit school full of teachers, full of students, and you start to investigate the roots of the outbreak by talking to people. That seems to be your task, maybe. But there's other strands to this as well. There is a personal story. The android that you play as seems to have been based on a human in this past, as is the All-Mother and the other sisters of whatever this strange, witchy, sci-fi, near-automata AI circle of women turns out to be. But it has a very haunting atmosphere, somewhere between sci-fi horror, existentialism, a little bit of anime thrown in there as well. It's a lot. It has a really nice art style. It has a really intriguing story and a good look all round. I would say this game has the feeling of a digital dream or a digital nightmare at times, actually. It's dark, it's tender, it's weird. Exactly my kind of thing. This is 1000 Times Resist, coming out for Switch and PC on May the 9th. So that's the end of our news section, but just before I get to the review of Mars After Midnight, let me mention the Patreon. This is a patron-supported show. If you enjoy this podcast, if you're a regular listener who's been listening for years, or a first-time listener who's just finding the podcast today, we have a Patreon. You can sign up for a dollar a month or more if you like. You get a catalogue of bonus episodes that are for patrons only, about off-topic things like music, books, travel. I will be recording one after this London adventure because I'm planning to go to some museums to see some art exhibitions like Yinka Shonibare, an artist I really like. There is also a Yoko Ono show going on in London. I've got books to read. I'm going to be going around London checking everything out, and I will make a patron-only episode about that trip afterwards. So if you're interested in a little bit of more personal content alongside the video game content of this show, then become a patron, and there is some there for you. It's patreon.com/gamingintheWild. There are some other things too. You will get an invitation to our lovely patron Discord, which is a very cozy corner of the internet, to talk about games. And I also publish some behind-the-scenes notes as well, the notes on how I make the podcast. So if any of that sounds interesting, it's patreon.com/gamingintheWild. Thank you very much to all my existing patrons, and thank you to you if that's something you would consider. And with all of that said, let's move on and talk about Lucas Pope's Mars After Midnight. Mars After Midnight is by Lucas Pope, as I have said. It's an odd little simulation game that came out on the Playdate earlier this year. Lucas Pope famously made Return of the Obra Dinn and the Border Guard Administration Simulator, Papers, Please, which I think was his breakthrough game. And this game bears some fun resemblance to Papers, Please, but is a bit more of a slapstick version. In this game, you run an after-hours community help center on the colonized surface of Mars in a Martian city populated by humans and a whole bunch of aliens too. And the community center helps out the citizens of this city and various non-human residents too with all of their problems. You have to set up these little help sessions such as the Cyclops anger management class, knife use for gnats, and some kind of flatulence support group called the Farty Party. And this is what you do in the game. You run the community center. It's a shop by day. It's a community center by night. And what this means is that you're going to play a series of mini games. The first is a preparation section where you will see a map of the Martian city from the top down, a high level map with various regions. I think there's 7 or so regions. You'll see little dots flashing on that map that tells you where your target audience lives in this Martian colony. And you have to place posters in the right areas to have the attendees show up. And it costs you money to do that. That comes out of your budget. You'll earn more if your event is a success. So there's a little bit of a management aspect to this one. After you have put up the posters, you then have to buy food for the snacks table. And depending on what kind of event you're putting on, you might need different kinds of food. Some food will be more expensive to get into stock, but then maybe more people will want it and you'll make more money in the end because they will pay for their meals. So there are all these different dishes that you can choose that appeal to different creatures and that cost different amounts. And there are lovely little animations for all of this stuff on the little black and white Playdate screen. Yeah, your character is some kind of three-eyed troll, it looks like. You sometimes see them just like walking to and from work, going to sleep at night, during the setup of the food, during the setup of the posters. You also get a nice sense of the city. I think that this game actually uses the tiny Playdate screen very, very well. And I guess Lucas Pope is good at making economical games. And so is perhaps one of the best people you could wish for to make a Playdate game. And it does manage to squeeze in an awful lot of character as your character is at home or walking the streets or setting up for the night. You get glimpses of the Martian city, just the street life, the buildings, all of these nice little glimpses that just really bring it to life and give it a sense of place that I thought was very well done considering the limitations of the console. And eventually, after all of that preparation, it's time for the night's events to unfold, and this gives you some more minigames. The first one is the one that uses the crank. So after you have rolled up the doors, put the signs up, done all of your prep, you are standing in the community center, and occasionally you will get a knock at the door. This means that the guests are starting to arrive. You will come to the door. It has a security latch, a little slit that you can open up. You have to use the crank on the Playdate to open up this little letterbox-style slit, you will have a drawing of the kind of person or the kind of alien that is welcome at this event. For example, if it is knife use for gnats, you're looking for gnats with knives buzzing around just outside of that window. If it is the farty party, you are looking for flatulent aliens. So you're looking through the letterbox into the three eyes of some giant bug creature, waiting to see if it will fart or not, which was a very funny moment. If it is anger management for cyclopses, you can only let in cyclopses that are not happy. You can only let in the angry cyclopses. And you have to get this right. So the knocks at the door will come fast and furious. You have to examine the entrant by winding up the crank to look through the slit. If they are the right kind of person that fits the bill, you let them in. They will then go to the snack table. And based on how well prepared you were, whether you have the right kind of food, etc., they will either walk past it and ignore it, or they will demolish it and give you a little contribution and pay for their food. The second mini game is repairing the table after it has been demolished by a gnat with a knife or an angry cyclops. This is a really funny physics-y little mini game. It's probably the main one, I would say. In this one, you use two buttons to control your two tentacles. You have two tentacles, I didn't mention that. And you have to solve this strange physics-y little puzzle where there are dishes everywhere, cups everywhere. There is like a cake slice, a plate full of burgers or whatever food you have bought. And you have to reorganize the table. To do this, you have to pile up the dishes. You only have two tentacles to use. So you have to pile them all up, lift them all up, clear the table with one of your tentacles, put them all down and arrange them in just the right spots. And then as you are doing this, you will be getting frantic knocks at the door from potential guests. And so you're trying to do it as quickly as possible. And it is a little bit slapstick. The tentacles don't control awfully well, which is just part of the game. So it's a slapstick version of Papers, Please, where you're trying to use your tentacles to frantically clean the eating area in time to let in more guests. This goes on over time. You let in more guests. You have to clear the table again and again. And eventually the session will happen. At the end of the session, the people will come flooding out of the room and they will rate how helpful they found it. So based on whether or not you let in the right kind of aliens, you'll get graded, basically. If they are happy, you will get money. If they are not, you will not. And so all of the work that you do throughout the preparation and the event hosting culminates in how much money you have to work with for the next round. Like, can you put up enough posters? Can you get the right kind of food? All of that kind of thing. So it's a nice, tidy little gameplay loop with lots of fun, short games to keep you amused. I think that I have played maybe four or five different events now, and they are funny. Like, each of them does have its own unique, funny twist, especially in just the funny kind of concepts for the things that you're going to be hosting. Like the different cyclopses, the gnats, you're looking for different kinds of creatures all of the time. And so you never really know what you're going to see when you wind open that hatch. A lot of the times it will just be randoms that don't fit the bill, which means that you are constantly seeing the strange faces of flumpy looking aliens with, you know, 15 eyes and 7 hands just looking at you, smiling happily through the box, waiting to be let in. But if you're looking for snakes or whatever, then you cannot let them in, but you are getting glimpses of all of the citizens of this Martian colony. As you are looking at their faces in the background, you can also see dark shapes kind of walking down the pavement on the opposite side of the street. And I think that is my favourite thing about the game, really. It's that it's a very neat and tidy concept. It is very economical. It is very clipped and proper, everything in the right place. It's clearly very well planned around the limitations of the playdate, more so than any other game I've played on the playdate so far. And I think the fact that it has several mini-games means that it stands out amongst the playdate catalogue games that I have played so far as quite ambitious in its own way. A lot of the playdate games have one idea that they do well, and they stop there. This game seems to have a whole bunch of ideas that ties up into quite an interesting whole. And that's not to be too down on Playdate games. I have played quite a lot of them now. I'm just looking at my Playdate right now. I have tried Yo-Yozo, which is an arcade-style game where you have to swing a pendulous ball around to try and collect coins. It's like a very simple game. I've also tried out Casual Birder, which I've talked about, Whitewater Wipeout, the surfing game that I've talked about, which is really just one idea. You know, you ride along a wave, you try and get a high score, and that is your lot. I've played Crankin's Time Travel Adventure, another very simple game. That one is made by Keita Takahashi, the Katamari designer. And that's a very simple game too. You just have to wind the handle to make your guy go out on a date. You have to get there as quickly as possible, and you get rated on how quickly you navigate the obstacles to get to your date. Very, very simple. A lot of these games I played for, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and I feel like I've seen what they have to offer, and they are neat, and they are cool, and they came free with the playdate, so I'm not moaning about them at all. But they do have a certain aesthetic. They are extremely retro. They have one idea, and depending on how into that idea you are, you will or won't play the game any further. I do like the playdate still as an experimental space for games, so I'm not crapping on the playdate at all by saying that these games are simple, but I would say that the Lucas Pope game, Mars After Midnight, is a step up from most of the others here. It just has more meat on the bones. The fact that you have different phases of gameplay with the overworld map where you're hanging posters, with the buying the different foods, with the managing your money, and then you have the slat that you have to look through by cranking it open. You have the monster identification phase. You have the food table physics puzzle phase. And the whole thing has so much character and quite a bit of variety for such a small game on such a tiny system. So I think that it is probably, it's at least for me, the most ambitious game that I've played on the Playdate so far. But I am not yet all of the way through the catalogue. I'm still just starting out on my Playdate journey. There are many games for me still to play. I'm looking at the list here. I have Echoic Memory, Flipper Lifter, Pick Pack Pup, Lost Your Marbles. I have Rota, Crunky, Space Rat Miner, Post Hero, Generations, Skew, The Botanist, Bloom, and Island, all of which I have not opened yet. And maybe during this little holiday, this little vacation work trip, I will get time to delve in deeper into some of those Playdate games. I hope so. If I'm in a brightly lit space, who knows, eh? But for now, that is Lucas Pope's Mars After Midnight. So that's our episode for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. We had the Nintendo Indie World Direct news, we had the 1000 Times Resist preview, and we had the little Playdate roundup and Mars After Midnight review at the end there. I think next week's show is going to be about WASD, this event that I'm going to at the Truman Brewery in London. I am looking now at the list of so far announced playable games. They are adding them at quite a rate. There is a lot of interesting stuff here. If you haven't seen this event before, it's at wasdlive.com. I did get a creator pass for it, so thank you very much to the organizers for that. And it looks like there's a lot on show. There are lots of games that I haven't heard of before. There is a game called Green Again that I'm looking at. There is a game called Horticula. So a few gardening games, a few eco games. There is Whisper Mountain Outbreak, which I think I have heard about before. That's a horror game, if I remember rightly. There is a Bootleg Steamer. This is a steamboat simulator where you have to stock the bar and run gambling and stuff like that. So it's like an old American game. There is a lot of stuff here. A game called Pine Hearts. I think I might have heard about that somewhere. Tiny Terry's Turbo Trip. So much stuff that I have not heard of. It looks like Devolver Digital have a strong presence here. They're going to be showing Children of the Sun, which I reviewed last week. Pepper Grinder, Cult of the Lamb, presumably the DLC for that one. They're showing Angerfoot. I played a demo of that one. So it's good that Devolver are there. Maybe there'll be some Devolver stuff that we haven't seen yet. And as I'm scrolling down here, I see a game called Dead Meat with an interesting visual style. Preserve, interesting. This looks like an isometric landscape builder or something like that. The House of Tesla is there. Bird Island is there, a bird watching game. Paper Trail is there, a game that we've seen a lot of in our past Nintendo Directs and so forth. So yeah, there's a lot here. The new Starship Troopers game is going to be there as well, which is interesting given that Helldiver 2 has been quite as successful as it has. And I get the feeling there are going to be games there that aren't yet on the website. But if you are particularly interested in any of the games that you see at wasdlive.com, then do tell me and I'll be sure to check them out. I am going to be spending quite a bit of time at the event. I've got some meetings lined up there and some people that I'm hoping to meet, some friends, some patron pods, pod patrons rather. So it's going to be a really fun time. But if any of those games leap out to you, then do shoot me a line. I'm on social media as Gaming in the Wild, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, etc. Let me know and I will try and cover the games that you are most interested in. If you are interested in videos as well, I do make them. I do have a YouTube channel that I've been pumping a huge amount of effort into. You can find that at youtube.com/gamingintheWild. I'll put a link in the show notes for that. And there is also the Patreon if you would like to support this podcast. If you are just a casual listener, star ratings are extremely appreciated on Spotify. Reviews are extremely appreciated on Apple Podcasts. But regardless of all that stuff, thank you very much for listening to the podcast. That's it from me for this week. So take care of yourselves and each other. And bye-bye for now.